You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, you know what the show is, and we'll do the intro in a second. This is me doing a little added thing because this episode was recorded last week and we didn't have this information in front of us. Just want to give our condolences to the friends and family of Stephen Hopperton and Corey Day. These are two fellows from Perth, Australia, and that's on the other side of the planet to a lot of the listeners. But the reason that you should care, aside from the fact that they're human beings, is also because you may not know it, but you have a lot of shared experience with these people. Stephen played in Miles Away, who I'm sure a lot of you know, and he ran Common Bond Records, also put together some tours. But and Corey Day, he played in Battle Truck and PC Thug, which I think Stephen did too. But anyway, the reason that I wanted to do this was because when it came to our attention, it came with a lot of love, and it was clear that these two people had done a lot for their scene. And a line that particularly resonated with me was that they were supportive of young people, and I'm not always that, and I admire people that are. So I just wanted to give a shout out and an RIP to these two gentlemen, and our condolences to the community in Perth, and also obviously friends and family. Everybody keep your head up. Those two fellas passed away in very close to each other in time, and that's how life goes sometimes. It can you got to express love for the people around you. So this is a fun episode, I promise, but wanted to pay our respects. Welcome to Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And joining us today...
I'm Carly.
Oh, I'm Danielle.
I'm Erica.
Yo, hello. Welcome. Thank you for joining us on our six-person intercontinental phone call.
Is this what people do who have office jobs? Is this the thing?
Dude, I held a meeting that I ran the other day. There was 65 people in it.
Oh, no. This is the actual limit. This is it. I don't go.
At least, you know what? If you run the meeting, you can just mute everyone and they have to listen to
that
you.
I respect.
It's terrible. It's awful. It's just a mosaic of people, none of whom are paying an ounce of attention.
I close my camera and mute myself.
Yeah.
I saw some kid, someone posted on Twitter that some kid, one of their students made their picture. It just says reconnecting. So he signs on as reconnecting and then leaves.
Brilliant.
That's awesome.
Brilliant.
That's really smart.
Kids are so smart these days. Like
so
this
industrious. I never would have thought of that.
Incredible.
So before we get into more talk on the way the world is right now, big shout out to all of our sponsors. We're going to keep it quick today. To Live a Lie, Death Wish Inc., Closed Casket Activities, and Run for Cover Records. You know, we love them, support them. They all have stuff going on. They all have web stores. Y'all maybe have stimulus money. Go support them and tell them Axe to Grind sent you.
Big maybe, Bob.
Big maybe. I know, but that's what it is. Carly, Danielle, and Erica, thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Y'all are involved in something. Y'all are involved in something called To the Front, which is a project that I've followed since the inception. I don't think I've really talked to any of you before, other than Danielle, who I've known for approximately 85 years. But it's give or take, right? It's one of the coolest projects going, and I respect it. It's the kind of thing that the energy around it's super awesome. Can you give us a little background? Because I think, and one of the reasons that I finally kind of got off my ass was like, hey, Danielle, I want to, can we do this? Was that it, we just passed the 4-year anniversary of your first event. So I don't know who wants to take it from there, but can you tell us a little bit about To the Front and how it started, Erica?
Well, To the Front, it started as just an art show that Courtney Coles, who's another photographer based in Los Angeles, and I were at her art show, which was all artists that were women of color, not music based at all. But we, from that show, had the idea of trying to get some friends together to do one that's music based. And like, after a lot of brainstorming, like, we both knew Carly at the time. And I think Courtney knew Danielle, but I had just admired her work online. Like most artists that I find now, it's just all online. And they were down to join us. So that started from 4 to now over 50 artists. And we've done 10 shows in different cities. We partnered with Sound and Fury in Los Angeles the last time that they had a show. So that's like a fond memory, because the last one is obviously canceled or postponed. Right. So it's been 4 years now. Anyone else wanna?
We had some cool things that were gonna happen. We were gonna do Anti-Fest in Pittsburgh. And then we were gonna do Sound and Fury, and obviously those two things didn't happen. So obviously a bummer, but so we had all these plans. We had all these, like, you know, we had like ideas of cities, but of course all that got put to a screeching halt.
Broad question for everybody, I guess, just to get the temperature of the room. Everybody doing all right during lockdown or during whatever's going on right now? Like, it being halted in some of the things that you want to do, is it, because Tom accused me of liking this too much and getting lazy and not wanting to tour and stuff like that. Are you all adapting or are you losing your minds? How's it going individually?
Carly gave the so-so. Danielle gave the so-so. Carly, tell us about it.
And Erica shrugged. Everybody's doing just okay-ish, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't okay before, you know? Like, I was never good. So, I don't know. I'm used to working, like, 12 or 18-hour days and being gone 10 months of the year. And now I'm just here all of the time. And it's okay.
Action Bronson. He's the only person I know that has flourished during.
I've technically flourished. I've.
That's true. He's not wrong.
You know, I'm making money, have more things going on. Like, I just, the thing that people tend to know me from is just at a total standstill. But personally, aside
no one likes
from
to show
fact,
off, Pat.
I mean, it is sad in the respect that I'm very, very far away from the woman in my life, and that's not good. But like, the, in general,
and Bob and I,
career. Yes, I'm away from you guys. That is heartbreaking. Sure. But career-wise, it's been kind of a boon, because so when Carly goes on tour, she actually gets paid. When I go on tour, it's dicey. You know what I mean? So this has been a nice opportunity to catch up financially. I'm almost like a real adult, and almost.
This is the opposite for me. I was doing financially well up until that, and I was like, "Well, there goes everything." I guess
I wanted to ask really quick because Carly mentioned this, and I've been going crazy quietly. Is this stationary nature of all this? That clearly was part of your job. It's not part of my job. I don't need to travel for my job. But being in the same place for this long is making me go crazy. Like, this is the longest time. I did end up having to do some stuff where I traveled a bit, but it's the longest I've been without being in California, for example, since I was, I don't know, a child. So I'm going nuts. And for people who do events and kind of put on things, it's an added weird stress. So when you're involved, all three of you go to a lot of live events, music, different stuff. Has that change in your life impacted you? Have you started to feel it on a regular basis, or has it been a longer soaking in process?
I'm going to say that I love live music, and obviously I love, you know, getting to do what I love. And it's so great to be at a show and bump into like Erica or see Carly, you know, like I really miss those things. But on the other hand, I have crippling social anxiety, and on top of regular anxiety, on top of just depression. And right. So,
this is a layer cake.
It's a gross layer cake, but I will say though, like, it's nice to not have that social anxiety, but that's, I think, really the only upside. I kind of like, you know, going off the grid and like disappearing and like, you know, nobody thinking about me or wonder, you know, I just like to be like invisible, and it's been that part's been nice.
Danielle, I don't mean to, this was not the purpose of this, of having you all as guests, but now I'm just super curious. Do you get nervous that indulging the part of yourself, because these guys will tell you, I don't need to leave the house for anything but Whole Foods pretty much ever. I think most people accept it as a part of my personality. People like my mother worry a little bit. Do you think that sometimes by indulging your natural inclination towards being alone or being removed from people, that you are kind of reaffirming some of the potentially maladaptive behaviors that you might have?
So are you saying self-sabotaging? Because absolutely.
Maybe a little bit. Like maybe just that it's easier to fall down a hole than it is to crawl out of one. And like, I feel great when I'm not around people, but then I'll realize shortly that I haven't had a real conversation in a month, and I'm starting to be like the castaway in Treasure Island. You know what I mean? Like I'm having a hard time forming sentences.
I also like to be alone a lot, but sometimes I think about Patrick and go, all right, I got to call this dude and talk to him for a few minutes, cause I'm not sure if he's talked to anybody for a day or two.
But the thing is, I feel great, but then I also wonder, is it maladaptive? And I wonder if you're going through this, if you have those same thoughts.
I mean, yeah, I guess like it, in a way I feel like you could compare it to, I don't know, like pushing on a bruise or like popping a pimple. Like it's like kind of a self-destructive thing, but it's like, whatever, you know, it's who I am. It's part of my nature. Like I've kind of tried to get almost completely off social media. Like got off Twitter, got off Facebook. I don't have TikTok or anything. But with Instagram, I've just been going down this like nostalgia hole lately, because I've definitely been like, well, you know, I
give
really
us more.
Well, so I was talking to one of my friends from Wilkes-Barre, and she commented on like an old photo of Title Fight I posted from like Redwood Art Space. Pat, I think Self-Defense Family probably played the show.
When you're done telling your story, you can tell people how badly we ruined that show for the crowd. But yes, go on.
What? No.
We had equipment break, but we didn't get off the stage until it was fixed. So like we probably were on stage for an hour at a show that is not our show.
Oh, so you didn't cut a song or two when you realized you were like,
it was one of the, in principle, it was the rudest thing I've ever done. Shout out to the Title Fight guys who have always been good to my bands.
Audacity.
My memory of it was, hey, we drove a long way to play this shit. We're going to get through this set. And my memory is that things just kept breaking, and we were just like, well, I guess Patrick's going to talk for 11 minutes. And
you're so good at that.
Yeah, but not that good at that. But sorry, go on.
No, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that just reminds me of like the first time I met you like 10 years ago. I was like, wow, this guy talks a lot. And I was like 19, but it's funny. But she responded to one of the pictures I posted, and she was like, when you didn't even know that these were the best days of your life. And I was like, just stabbed me. And then so since then, I've just been super nostalgic, this was from like 2009. This is from, oh my God, like what the fuck? Like, this is who I am now. Just this really sad, nostalgic person. We had it so good and we didn't even know.
Yeah,
it's funny. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, please.
Everyone is can fall into nostalgia traps, and I love like reminiscing, but I never look back at stuff and think like, wow, this was so good. Or I can never look back at something and be like, I was so happy. Cause like, I was never, I can always like look back and be like, at least I wasn't happy then either.
Yeah. Oh, the thing is like, I was probably worse in my depression and my anxiety like back then than I am now. Cause I did not have coping skills, and I never knew how to like handle myself. Except for being like a loud, obnoxious person. Cause I just like, I don't know what to do. But it's definitely just like, oh, I miss these little, like, I try to find little pockets of happiness in all the despair, because then those are like, I don't know. I know this is getting dark, but it's like, those were like great memories, like nice little moments that like, I'll always have to look back on. And then it's like back to just the depression, back to being sad. I like reminiscing about certain things and then trying to forget the other stuff.
So you're photographers, and how tell me about the relationship between now this is me trying to be like fucking like you're on Masterpiece Theater now. Tell me about the relationship that's such an old reference, Bob. Half of our audience is not going to even get Masterpiece Theater.
Okay.
Never mind. Never fucking mind. But tell me about the relationship between capturing images and nostalgia. The two things seem
intertwined, right? I
mean, yeah, inveritably linked. Yeah. And I'm the sort of fella, no offense to anybody that does show photography, I'm sick of looking at myself. I never need to look at myself again in my life. But I do find myself, I follow one of those YouTubes that put, like, everybody's got this in their hometown scene, I assume. The one strange archivist that recorded every show. There's one from where I'm at who will post something like maybe like once every 3 months, and I'll go, oh, this was a terrible show. I'm going to watch it for an hour and 15 minutes. Now, tell me about your relationship between photography and nostalgia, if you have an answer for that question.
I don't know if Danielle and Erica, if you ever experienced this, but sometimes I will go through like spells of not editing or, doing anything photo wise other than simply shooting them and then never touching the camera again. Sometimes I can't edit stuff because it bums me out to look at it. Especially if it was like a happy time. I don't know. I don't know. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, I have, for the most part, towards the beginning of quarantine, I was kind of burned out from shooting shows because I was going so often. I liked doing like behind the scenes stuff and just beyond the live photos. And then all of those photos, like immediately I was like looking back at them and editing them and just like being so stoked on like those memories and hoping that shows were going to come back in the summer. It was like March and I'm like, the shows are coming back in the summer. And they didn't come back. And like from then until now, I haven't, for the most part, unless someone asks me for a photo for something specific, I haven't touched any of my music work and I don't post it anymore. Cause like for the most part, when I post something, it's like my favorite from that set. So I don't want to just give you photos of a band that you can't watch for another year or two. And I've, thankfully, like recently been more into shooting film and shooting things that are like day-to-day stuff that I was into shooting when I was getting into photography when I was like 15. So that's one positive from this is now I'm like kind of like relighting that fire that I had for photography and just making images. They don't have to be of a band or of a show, but I definitely miss it. And like looking at any of my music archives is just pretty depressing.
I wouldn't try to convince you to do otherwise. You do whatever you want with your photos, but I will say that as much as that is an experience for a lot of people, the inverse is also the fact, like Danielle said, some people just look at those old photos and just it's like a beacon to them. You know what I mean? So obviously you do what you want, but it's kind of like an interesting thing that I feel the same way about. Like, I think Bob and I have talked about this because he has a child. I get very dark about milestones and I got no idea why. I had a good childhood, but like birthday parties, communions, anything like that, I get like dark. I don't know why. But to other people, they look at them and they go, ah, you know what I mean? That was great. So like, I probably experienced things similar to how you do of looking at these things and going, damn, it's almost like a scab right now, but there's a lot of people who feel otherwise.
It's weird because I like watching the videos and I love watching a live stream. Like I love seeing the Hate 5-6 videos of any show that I wasn't even at. but if it's my own photos, I'm like, damn, like I remember specifics about that night or that show or that tour. And it's just like, I just am optimistic for when things come back. Like as anxious as I feel to go to like a very populated place right now, I know that right. I will be very down to go to a show once I'm vaccinated.
Sure. Like, I have a million questions, so I better get in before Pat asks another.
No, sorry. I do you like how I ask a question and then I make it about myself for like 11 minutes and then I go,
yeah, he's like, what's your favorite curse word? My favorite curse word is blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's like, yeah, cool.
And then all I'll right, say, if you don't mind expanding on what I just talked about for 4 minutes.
Sure. See what Danielle, the way Danielle put it is the best. You've always been a good talker. I met you 10 years ago and you've just
very nicely
stopped
said.
Talking. Yeah.
Let me say
you're very
this.
Thought-provoking.
He hasn't stopped talking since then.
Let me say this. I got my first message of this type the other day. Bob and Tom interrupt you too much. And I said, thank you so much.
That
I
was
said,
fake.
I've been
that was
I said, I've been waiting for this. I appreciate that.
We have
did
to
your
sometimes.
Mom send it?
No, not my mom. That would be something my mom says. Yeah. But no, I was happy. It was someone that appreciated being turned on to Final Conflict. Really thinks it rips. Loves it. Yes.
Tell them, yeah, thanks, Bob. Okay.
And then said, but they interrupt you a lot. And I said, I know. I really know.
What would the show be if we didn't?
I'd be a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. So, I would literally put up reconnecting and then walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom, you have questions. I'm sorry. Go on.
I have questions. So one of the things, we'll start with Carly. Did what started for you with photography? Was like, were you interested in photography first, or were you like a show photography person that learned, like expanded from like punk and hardcore, or were you into photography to start?
Yeah, yo, that's such a good question. All three, please. But Carly, yes. Start.
I was always into like taking like snapshots of friends and stuff. Sure. Like my grandfather was super into photography, and I like somewhere in storage have like a bunch of his old equipment.
Amazing.
My mom was always taking photos of the family. So I was always into like just, you know, making snapshots of friends.
Sure.
So of course, when I started going to shows, I started bringing a camera and it just kind of, you know, developed.
No pun intended.
Yes.
Yeah. And whoever else wants to, yeah. There's a cat. We have seven living things in the room now.
He's my emotional support man.
Similar to Carly, I think I was like 15 when I started taking photography classes, and I was already going to shows at that point. So I just remember, like, I still have some wonky notebooks of just like bad disposable photographs of like the virus and the glass at the glass house in Pomona. You can't see anybody. You can see the back of a few Mohawks, but I, for some reason, took those photos, pasted them on the paper, and I was like, I'm going to want to see this in the future. Like, I don't know, but it happened naturally because I was just shooting my friends, and I eventually got a digital camera and did it more seriously. And now here we are.
That's awesome.
When I was probably maybe 12 years old, I was very nosy when I lived at my parents' house, and I remember going through, there's like it's like a hutch with like your like china and then just like drawers that your parents just put shit in.
Yeah. Junk drawers.
Yeah. I was so bored and I was going through it and I pulled out, like, my mom had this camera. It was a Canon AE-1. This obviously is not the same one. That one broke, but I found it and I was like, holy shit, this is crazy. And I started playing around with it and I was like, Mom, what's up with this? And she's like, oh, like, yeah, I'll fix it up and get some film for you. Cause I guess she was very into photography when she was in high school, and she doesn't throw things away. She's not a hoarder, but she's also a very nostalgic person. So she keeps a lot of stuff. This was also kind of the time I was listening to punk and hardcore, and going to like local shows in Doylestown. So I just was kind of shooting just everyday stuff on film, and going to shows, but I didn't actually start taking photos at shows until I was probably 2 or 3 years later. In Doylestown, we had the Teen Center, which is like, I guess, kind of legendary in a way. But yeah, I had like a point and shoot I would bring there and shoot. And I didn't think anyone would give a shit. And then people started asking me to see the photos. And then here I am.
It's amazing. And I think funny, like a story that's kind of, it's known. So I don't know if you know this, Bob, you know, someone who's part of To the Front, who was part of some of the shows, Becca later, who we've tried to have on,
incredible.
That we
couldn't
work out, all sorts of stuff. Amazing. So her photography teacher is Pam, who's married to Corey Williams. So she got into photography through Pam from Long Island, who's like the OG Long Island, like hardcore photographer. And now like they shoot alongside each other now. So it's fucking amazing.
Becca is so cool.
She's amazing photographer.
She's so cool. My God.
That's so interesting. So full disclosure, with total respect for all three of you, I'm not like a photography guy at all. I feel like a lot of my friend. No, it's different, Danielle. It's worse than you think. It's like my friends
Bob and I were just like, oh no.
I'm like, what is he gonna say now? I'm like the person that's like, I don't know. It's just like a image of a thing that happened, right? Like I perfectly don't understand it. Like I'm.
This
like,
is gonna connect to a conversation I'm gonna privately have with Patrick soon about how he doesn't listen to his own mute voice. So we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, it's just a thing that happened. Like, right. So I'm not like, interested in photography, but I am interested. I am interested in anything where there's a lineage. Like I found it very interesting. I believe two of you said that there's at least some family connection. People in your family enjoyed photography at one time and then you enjoy. And then I thought that was interesting that Tom said, I had never thought about the fact that just as in music, there's OGs, people that I would be really interested in hearing a story from, people that I would be interested in knowing what it was like at whatever era or whatever. It totally, and this is obviously stupid as fuck, it totally didn't occur to me that photographers have that as well, right? Like you could have that conversation with an older photographer and just be like blown away in the same way that I am when I like met the Stern brothers, you know what I mean? Like, right. That type of like OG thing is cool.
I mean, Bob and I talked about it. And I'm sure, you know, everyone's familiar, like BJ Pappas and like Justin Dimitrik were like so important. Like I saw BJ was part of one of the shows too. Like I mean, in New York, like that was it. The both of them were like the photographers. There was really nobody else.
Yeah.
But so, and this is part of my second question. And then I'll cede the room back to Bob.
I think Erica had something to say first.
Oh gosh, sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's what you were going to say, which is like, I grew up looking at BJ's photos and like any response from her that she was interested in being part of our LA show. I was just, it was more exciting to me than like meeting anyone else that I've met. Was just talking to her about like her being interested in like sending work to be in the show.
So far.
And then actually finally meeting her at another photographer's like separate show later on. But she's right. So cool. Like, that's what
and
I love about
yeah. her. She's like, so nice and she's incredible, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that, yeah, sorry. That just reminded me of another photographer who was very prominent in like the 80s DC punk and hardcore scene, Susie J. Horgan, I think is how you pronounce her name. Mm-hmm. She has a book called Punk Love. Actually, this is the book that I forgot about this because I'm old and I have terrible memory now. But I picked up this book when I was in middle school at the Doylestown Bookshop. And I looked through it and I was like, oh my God, she took the cover art, the Teen Idols cover art, all the most famous Minor Threat, Bad Brains, Black Flag photos. She is the reason that I decided to start doing behind the scenes and like documentary stuff. And she's incredible. And I'm like, why don't more people know who she is or talk about her? But it's just like, yeah, like BJ and Justine, like these incredible, I feel like the pioneers, you know, of show photography.
Absolutely. And I think something that like Bob and I had, and we were talking about earlier, and I think, you know, band photography has become, at least in my opinion, like more iconic than any record cover that band could have. And I think, you know, like all your work and like Angela Owen, like you're remembering a Turnstile picture more than you're remembering a Turnstile album cover, most likely, because yeah. There's so many iconic photos. And I mean, I guess this kind of speaks to like the BJs and stuff like that, but like, are there any sort of like, were there any photos that you're like, shit, that's really kind of, if I could make that happen, that's what I would want to do. I mean, it's the same thing in music. It's like, oh man, I wish I could write a song like that. Like this photo, if I could somehow get something this cool, I would want to do that.
The London Calling cover. It feels like a cliche answer, but it's iconic. And also, I believe the story with that photo is that the photographer didn't initially want it used because it's not like technically a perfect photo. It's not like right. Sharp focus.
That's always how it happens.
Yeah. So I also try to remind myself of that.
Sure.
Just because I can definitely be way too precious with things that no one is going to notice.
Right.
Yeah, I think looking at like Susie's work, and just thinking of some very like iconic record covers that were like, I think the, cover for Out of Step was like, oh, he just put his head down and we took the photo. It wasn't planned. It's like, holy shit. Like, imagine, like, I'm like, holy shit. Like, that's like, you know, goals, take an iconic photo that just happened and wasn't planned, you know, like, it's like, I love those stories. Like, those are my absolute favorite stories. Those are, I think, the most inspiring.
Absolutely. There's too many to like, I can't really pinpoint one right now, but I would say that like, for live stuff, there's a photographer named Jim Marshall, and he documented a lot of like Johnny Cash's behind the scenes and live photos. And all like most black and white in film. So like his images for me are like the most I can see one and know that it's his work. And I just grew up looking at them and being so like enamored by it. And then going to like a punk show and being like, I want to somehow emulate that. I don't know if I succeeded, but I like the fact that like everybody has their own style of taking pictures. And for a non-live album cover, The Damaged album cover is my favorite. And I've had a photo inside of an album and on the back of an album, but not on the front. So that's still one of like the dangling carrots for my career. So
makes sense.
Another, I'm going to shut up about this, but
no, don't.
Robbie Red Cheeks.
Shout out.
Literally, like, I don't even, he inspired, like, my, I guess, like, me starting to shoot hardcore and punk shows the way I did. And I remember this, my age is showing. He messaged me on Centrifuge and told me I was in high school. He told me he liked one of the photos I took. And I just remember being like, oh my, I freaked out. I was like, this guy, he likes something I did. And then we formed like a beautiful friendship. And I think he's severely underrated. He's probably like one of the absolute best to ever do it. And I wish he still did it. And he's also just such a kind and wonderful person. Like when I was probably 19 or 20, he called me. I was in Ocean City, New Jersey with my family. And he's like, hey, can you come to Philly to take Sick of It All promos? I'll give you my lights. And I was like, definitely. I was sweating the whole time. I was so anxious. I think the photos were terrible, but the fact that he asked me to do something like that, I was just like, me? What? Like, it's still, I'm still in awe to this day. He's just such an amazing person.
And incredibly talented too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? This is so, again, pardon my total ignorance on photography stuff. There's bands that that we really like that we acknowledge are not good, right? Like, it just has a charm. And is there any photographers? Don't name them.
We cannot name any.
What is charming? Let's frame it this way, as opposed to that.
Photographers.
I think the way Carly talked about that the Clash record, you know, like a photo that. If you know about photography, you're like, yo, this isn't, you know, it's kind of out of wonk and, you know, you might look at it a different way, but that still has so much personality or, like Pat was saying, charm that you find yourself drawn to it.
The kinder way to say that.
That's a great question.
Firstly, that a photographer's worst critic is the photographer themselves. Like, we all are so hard on each other.
I was going to say, you should hear us talk right before shows, but go on.
Yo, wait, what's that like? What is it like, a pep talk? Is it like just getting out your fears? Yeah. What is it like?
It's all of us asking the other. Yeah, we're all like, is it, can I just leave? Can we go?
Do we have to bed?
All of us.
We're all pretty introverted and planning something that people are going to specifically to see your work and you is like a nightmare. It's like, it's like a bad dream where you're in front of people at school, you know, like, but it's like facing your fears and you have like an adrenaline rush right after that.
You know, because you're illuminating something that you don't think about. I get it. Cause I'll do episodes where I just ask these dudes questions, but they don't ask me back. It's, you know, the photographer. Yeah. They're holding the camera, but they're behind it. They're not in front of it. You know, so when you put that together, I've never thought about it like that. You're right. And
it's very weird.
It's like recording a demo and then playing it in front of 200 people and be like, so what do you guys think?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's true. Like, there's no kind of, you know, like, you're your own worst critic. Just like we all, like anyone who does any kind of artistic thing, you're like, ugh. And now you're putting it out to be seen by hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people. You're like, this is the worst day. Yeah, I totally can see why.
Well, doing the live event puts them in front with it, though. You know, you can post pictures and you're not like, hey, here I am with my picture. It's just, here's the pictures, you know?
There's a lot of like, oh yeah, I didn't know you took that. And it's like, but before I know Erica and Carly definitely remember this, but like our very first show, I mean, we were all, there's like a, I think Erica took a picture of me laying on the floor because I was having such bad anxiety. And like, we were all just sitting there like, can we, like, and not to sound ungrateful, but it was just very overwhelming when you're so used to being the one behind the camera, you're invisible. And, you know, you're there to like your job is to document other people, but then when you're kind of put on display, it's just like, oh my God, can we go home? Like,
can I ask?
I feel vaguely, yeah. I feel nauseated just thinking about those days.
This is such a funny topic to me. The notion of having a need to express yourself, but also having like a deep social anxiety where all of the mechanisms by which you do that are just, for lack of a better word, triggering as hell. And that's like, I never really thought about that because that's not one I experienced, but that's like, that's a trip.
Well, we got the mechanicals of to the front, but with all of this said, why?
Right.
Why what?
Why do it? Because it's such like to do the event because you're like, torturous. Oh man. No, I understand, you know, like there's this place and you guys filled this cool void, but like knowing you were going to go up against these kind of this conflict of self, you know, to do an event like this.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or, are they going to say it? Yes, vegan and veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. You can get chef prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring, maybe gardening. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. That is the type of meal I prefer. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Now, I'd like you to head to factormeals.com/axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. And use code axetogrind50. That's numeral 50. To get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's insane. That's code AXTOGRIND50 at factormeals.com/AXTOGRIND50. That's to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Crazy.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Chris DeMakes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Chris DeMakes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Chris DeMakes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
I think with our first show, it was supposed to just be like friends at an art show. No one is asking us to put our work up on the wall, so we're going to put our work up on the wall and have like a little, just a hang.
Right.
But since then, there's been more purpose behind it, and it's also been kind of an exercise to like step out of your comfort zone and what I forgot to mention was, like, with each show that we've had, we find local organizations to donate to. So then there's also the incentive of, like, doing it for something we believe in, and raising funds that way, trying to help out each other by, you know, promoting each other's work and getting ourselves out there, even though most of us and most artists in general, I think, are pretty introverted.
Yeah.
But there's, like, power in numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Good point.
All right. Here's a therapist question.
Yeah. Keep them coming. I feel like that's all I've been rolling with. My bad today. Sorry.
No. But I mean, you know, it's part of what I do for a living, you know, whatever.
Mm, sure.
So here's what I'm hearing, and I'm wondering if this is, like, you know, some of us, I mean, I can agree with a lot of the social anxiety and stuff like that. Do you feel like a camera helps you sort of bridge that? Like, do you enjoy going to a show without your camera? Like, or do you need that to kind of, like,
head shakes, everybody?
It's like a barricade to keep people, like, one step away from me.
That's a really good question. I'm curious to hear these answers.
I also have, I mean, since I spend so much time working, not necessarily shooting, I have a hard time going to shows that I'm not working. You know, I like having a thing to do.
Yes.
Right.
I need something to do with my hands.
Right.
When I started going to shows, it was by myself. And I felt like when I was with, like, doing photos, making photos, I had my camera with me. It didn't matter if I didn't know anybody else. It didn't, you know, no one was looking at me being like, she has no friends. But when I had my camera, it's like, at least I'm taking pictures.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Yep, exactly. And I still feel that way. Like, you know, a lot of the time, you know, I'll text Erica, we'll text each other, hey, are you going to this show? Okay, we're both on an assignment. Cool. Like, see you there. Or sometimes we don't even know that the other is shooting. So we get in the photo pit and it's like, oh my God, thank God. You know exactly what I'm feeling. This is just great. Right. And then you hang out together. So yeah, that's the one of the really, really nice parts about it too.
That's awesome. All right. I have another a pro question that it always bothered me, and you guys will know. It's not like a pro, like, what's up with bands that only allow you to shoot the first three songs? What does that mean? Like, why is that a thing?
I thought it was the opposite. I thought it was, is that what it is? Or who makes that rule?
The bands or the venue?
The band sets it. The three songs is the standard. So, like, unless a band says otherwise, that's what the venue is going to enforce generally. Yeah. But definitely there are bands who do, like, I've seen bands who do, like, songs 2, 3, and 4, or like 4, 5, 6, or like you shoot the whole set.
Right. What's the reasoning, do you think? Like, I mean, you would, yeah, what's the reasoning?
I've been told it's so that the experience isn't ruined for the fans, that they don't want to have photographers, you know, whether that's true or not, whether the band doesn't want to have cameras in their face, their whole set. But usually, you know, you're supposed to respect the first three, but I feel like smaller venues, obviously, they don't have that rule.
No.
Yeah, I mean, generally not going to be enforced if there's not a barricade, but yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
I shot Demi Lovato a couple years ago.
Wow.
And her rule at the time, which was strictly enforced by whoever, like, worked for her at the time, it was, you can only shoot the first 30 seconds of the first three songs, and you can't shoot her from the front. You can only shoot her from the sides. And then when I was supposed to shoot Avril Lavigne, you could only shoot her from the soundboard. But then when I shot the Backstreet Boys, like, you could be all up in there. Like, it definitely varies, but it's, yeah, there's some really interesting ones.
It's fascinating to, like, I mean, especially to have those parameters beyond the three songs to kind of be like, only from the side, only from, like, the soundboard, you're 50 feet away, 75 feet away. Would you have to have, like, a crazy lens to be able to get anything? You know?
Yeah.
What I was able to shoot Green Day was when they were playing in San Diego, and I found out in the middle of a work day. And obviously the drive from LA to San Diego is like 3 hours maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
But for their show, it was I think it was like a song and a half, and their songs are so short. So the stress was high, but I taken so many photos in such a short amount of time in my life. That's, and I still haven't.
Those scenarios are so stressful, but they're like a challenge. And sometimes like some of the best photos you've ever taken could come from like a challenge like that.
You want to hear how
it's fun to set parameters.
You want to hear how stupid I am? Yes. When I've a couple tours on the last drug church cycle, photographers would take photos of us and then leave after a couple songs, and I would say, "Damn, they fucking hate us." You know what I mean? I didn't know there was a reason. I didn't know there was any rationale behind it. I was like, damn, that cleared out quick.
Holy shit.
Fucking suck tonight.
That's amazing.
Wait,
but you didn't think anything of the entire photo pit of people all leaving at once? You were this is a song they all hate.
It's a group text. Carly, let's get out of here. This guy is a little rough.
Yeah. Carly, you'd be surprised at what I use as ammo against my band. I'll be like, that was a set killer. Look it, they left. You know what I mean? Like stuff like that. I'd be like, we're not doing that one again.
And they were all like, what the fuck are you even talking about?
So
I
wanted to ask the other side of that. You know, because you're talking about the pro side where it's you can only do the first three songs. Oh, from here, from there, that's it. Only the 1.5 songs. What about the, hardcore punk show where there's no rules and there's, because this is something that's come up as someone who's booked festivals and pretty large shows. There's 30 photographers all trying to get on the side of the stage. It's really hard to manage from the promoter side, I'll say that. But at the same time, who wants to be the dickhead who's like, no, only like 5 photographers, blah, blah, blah. What are your feelings there when it's photographer overload?
It's definitely, it's something where it's definitely crazy and it can be very overwhelming. In those instances, a lot of the time, either I'll try to be on stage for 2 songs because I'm a very short, small person. So it's I have to sometimes just sit like this. Like you've probably seen, I'm in too many Hate 5-6 videos where I'm just like a little bridge troll, but I'll try really hard to challenge myself. Okay. I'm going to go to do some sort of a different perspective. I'll go to the balcony, even though that's not that much different, or I'll just I'll put on a longer lens and shoot from the back a little bit, try to do something different. So I try to challenge myself with situations like that. And then I also feel bad because I'm I don't want to be in anyone's way. I don't want to annoy anybody. I don't want to be the person who fucks up and does something. It's one of my biggest fears is just tripping over a cable or ruining the whole thing. And so I try to be invisible.
Yeah. I mean, I feel similarly. I'm sure it sucks having to be the person who tells. I mean, I've also had to be the person who tells photographers that they can't be on stage. It sucks. But also there's a point at which it interferes with the show. It interferes
boundaries.
With enjoyment. And yes. You just have to you can't have everyone on the stage.
100%.
And it sucks. But it's just how it is.
I have an issue because I'm tall, but also I have bad knees where I can easily dislocate a knee again and not walk for a few months. So when I'm at a punk show where I know that I will get hit if I'm right in the front and right in the middle, I have to get there early and stand on the sides or figure out an angle and make it work. And I have no problem doing that. But I never feel entitled to go on the stage unless I know the band or I know someone that has asked me to take photos for them and that's fine. But I think in general, most of the photographers I know, that are part of To The Front, try to be pretty respectful and have know there's a boundary there. I've seen it get pretty crazy though. And I personally like to Photoshop cameras out of my shots. But at a certain point, that is not possible. with my editing skills.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely stopped at some point, like several years ago, if I saw more than a certain number of people with cameras in up front, I was like, I'll sit this one out. I don't need to be another one, you know?
Yeah. It gets kind of piggybacking off what Erica said, like, unless I know the band, like they asked me to be on stage to shoot, or, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like one of my best friends or something. And, you know, I know that it's okay. But even if I'm on stage, you know, and it's like people I know, I still am like, hey, is this okay? Like, please tell me to fuck, like, you can tell me to fuck off and I will be fine with it. Like, please tell me to fuck off. Like, I don't want to, you know?
So I always find that, the conversation, like, you know, when the internet was having a fun time with photographers, maybe whenever that was, like last year,
that was my fault.
Was that your fault?
That was, are you talking about like the Sound and Fury shot that Regional Justice Center posted? That's right. My photo.
I could not for the life of me remember what actually started the conversation, but that's right.
It was my fault.
What band was that during?
Have Heart at Sound and Fury, yeah, 2019, right. I think. Yeah. That's because I was on the balcony trying to just avoid getting in anyone's way. And I didn't want to, I wanted to be, but so you were right there. I looked up and I was like, oh, yes.
I retract my statement about not knowing what live photo is iconic. I want to pick that one.
That's a good one.
I didn't even shoot that photo with any intention of anything. It was just like one of the many like shots of the crowd and the band. Like I wanted to get the whole picture, and
what's everyone's preference? Is it like, is it the epic crowd shot or like an awesome band portrait? Like a singer, guitar player, drummer in their element. Like, you know what I mean? Think of portrait. Okay.
When it comes to photos of the band, I prefer candids, like, or portraits. And when it's a show, my favorite part is the fans' reaction to the music.
Sure.
So anyone like stage diving or just in the crowd losing their mind over what's going on. Yeah. Those are my favorite photos.
Yeah.
I've really started to believe that photographs of particularly lead singers, also guitarists, but particularly lead singers, that meme where we say society has moved past the need for photographs of lead singers. We've been covered. You know what I mean? Like, it's all good.
The tightly cropped in photos, like singing into the microphone.
I'll tell you what, when you are 24, you are looking at those being like, I fucking rule. You know what I mean? But by the time you got crow's feet and you're not looking so hot, you're like, you know what? I don't need to see this anymore. I'm good.
Grandpa Joe says, don't take any more pictures of me. News at 11.
No, honestly, my biggest concern, and sorry, like, to reduce like your craft to like my very petty concerns. I think I've expressed this to Carly because she's taking photos of my bands. I've always got a booger. And if you are taking photos from the barrier between the barrier and the photo pit, you're getting my booger. And it's like, I'm just insecure the entire time. And I'm not often insecure on a stage, but I'm always like, damn it. What?
You must have stage towels.
The last time I saw you in person was in Seattle in January last year.
Mm.
And you saw me down in the photo pit. And then you started talking about that on stage.
It's
about
it's
your boogers.
I have a big nose. I've got a big nose.
Dude, and you just have to turn around during, I don't know, someone's tuning. Take your pinky, jam it up there, and then just like wipe it on your arm.
Or stage like towel, as I think Tom said. I think stage towel.
You're playing real venues. They give you towels you can bring out on the stage. You're not playing ABC No Rio. You'll be fine.
Not to be disgusting, you have no idea how many sneakers have a booger on the side of them from playing these shows, or the very cuff of my pants.
I mean, how my legs have been, my feet have been spit on. Like,
oh yeah,
Listen, if there's no photos of your booger, does the booger exist?
Right. Exactly.
That's a compelling question.
Society has moved past the need for booger shaming, man.
Everyone's got
it. Just let it go, man. We're all good.
Especially with nose rings.
Cool with y'all, I guess I'm cool with it.
I'm going to go back and look at my drug church photos and see if there's any boogers.
Can you put some in if they're not?
Yes.
It's going to be like the Nickelodeon photos of drug church, just neon SpongeBob coming out his nose.
Yeah, no, there's just, you can't do that on television, slime coming out of my nose.
I don't know.
Aaron Carter once said, and this quote stuck with me, like from when I was a kid, and I think about it all the time. He said, "Everybody picks their nose. There's no shame in it. Just fucking do it." It's like everybody poops. Everybody picks their nose. It's not a big deal. Like, I'll pick my nose.
There you go. Well, for everybody at home.
Double barrel.
Well, Aaron Carter is
truly, you know, one of the minds of our time.
Yeah, that's
well,
a
this
wise
was when
guy.
This was when he was, you know, on Lizzie McGuire. Yeah, this was when he was, I had a crush on him.
You didn't get the face tattoos and beefing with his brother and all that sort of stuff. Not yet.
So I've got a question. Is there a best photo that you have not shared with the world for whatever reason? Like, is there a photo that you have taken that you have been impressed by, either for your technical, you nailed it that day, or it's got a real thing going on, but you either wanted to keep it to yourself and or somebody was really picking their nose in the scene and you didn't want to put it out. Whatever it is there anything that isn't, that you don't share?
I mean, barely post anything anymore. So there, yeah, I share almost nothing at this point.
I don't
they,
share.
They don't enough. Deserve you, Carly. Don't share.
I don't share. If somebody does not want me to share something or I can't share something, like I've been sitting on some cool photos that, you know, an artist doesn't want me to share, and I will be respectful of that. So that's the only reason why I wouldn't. Or if I look at the photo and I think, would I be bummed if this was me and if someone's making like a weird face or something? Like I sometimes try to think of it, would they be bummed out over how they look? Like a mid set, like, or something.
Yo, that's the biggest heart thing I've ever heard anyone say.
That's a very kind
thing to do.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't think that's a popular viewpoint, because every goddamn photo I've seen of myself the last few years has been like a horror show. But
it looks like you're doing math in your head, like extensive.
It always looks like I'm confused. And
you're like trying to divide like 1,000 by like 1,700 or so. Yeah. You're just like not.
So that's kind of you. That's great. I wish more people thought that way.
So, I mean, Eric,
I feel like you're kind of doing the job wrong if like you're posting photos that like the person is unhappy with, you know?
And I'm also like a very self-conscious person with my own image. So I sort of assume that everybody else feels the way I do or might. And I'm like, oh, that would make me feel bad. I don't know.
Erica, I wanted to ask the same question, except are there any photos that are great, like awesome photos that you're like, these are great, but for whatever reasons you can't use them?
Yes. And it comes down to permission again, because I think like having your strongest photos on your website when you're looking for work is important. So obviously if I think it's a great photo, I do want to put it online. But if it's something that I agreed with like the band or with their manager not to post something if it's not approved, or you know, if they only pick 5 photos out of however many, I can't do anything with those. So that's a bummer, but I'll at least have it for myself. Like, but there's been several, right. There's been several instances where I'm like, why did I agree to like these restrictions, you know, right. Even with signing releases and stuff, that stuff stresses me out. Like, please don't sue me. I have no idea what I'm allowed to do or not.
No money. Please.
There's nothing to take.
And does that happen often, like up front, that people would be like, you can't use this for anything, like even for your own kind of, you know, your portfolio and stuff like that? They just are that. I understand not using it for like commercial purposes, but I'm sorry. Yeah, I spoke right of you.
No, it's I did. I'm sorry. That's happened to me mostly for like large metal bands or pop artists.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
Right. Even the, like, yeah.
Yeah. The more, I guess, the more like image, the people who are the, I guess, have to be image conscious or whatever.
Yeah. Demi Lovato. I think that's interesting that, so that's a whole can of worms that would take like a long time to pick apart. But like the idea that you and your team recognize that you have a bad angle is an interesting concept. You know what I mean? Like, how does that go? Like, you all sit around and go, delicately, respectfully, Demi, we talked, and ultimately you're the decider here, but we think 3/5, you know,
3/5 left side, maybe we steer away from that.
I mean, that makes sense though. I mean, do you remember like a couple years back, there was one bad photograph of Beyonce ever. And that became like the biggest thing because it's like this perfect human being was seen with a little bit of like, it wasn't 100% perfect.
Tom, she should have my fucking life. She should have my life. Never been a good photo of me. Beyonce,
I'm gonna throw something at you. Pat, you are no Beyonce, okay? In myriad
ways. Have you considered imposing restrictions on what you allow people to take photos of during your set, Pat?
Carly, you know full well I'm not into giving anybody rules. You all can throw the cameras at me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That was a silly question.
It's whatever. I would never, straight up, I would never, ever, ever tell. Even when kids have been on the stage, like obviously total amateur photographers, like their first prosumer fucking DSL, like just like fucking in my crotch, I've just been like, just physically move the kid a little bit. You know what I mean? Cause it's whatever.
Generally not too much, you know?
Yeah, not too much.
Pat, I've got some photos of you where you've straight up looked in the camera and been like, you posed for me.
Correct. Yo, this MF-er over here trying to pretend he doesn't make videos into the camera, trying to pretend he ain't selfieing. Like, come on, get out of here. Listen,
In 2021, I'm on the Danielle tip. If I didn't have to, like, here's the deal. This is the tragedy of my life. I'm not good at anything except for like expressing myself. I'm not even good at talking. I'm just a good So I have to be public facing for the rest of my life. But otherwise, I'd be on the Danielle tip and just sort of let me. I'm gonna fade. But I gotta. The other day I was like, I should get rid of this fucking Instagram. And then I was like, I got records to sell. Like
you say, show and prove 2021. Let's go.
I can't get rid of it. I'm trapped.
You say.
I often feel that way, but I'm like, well, this is how I get all my jobs lately. So I cannot.
I mean, that's a good question because we've spent a lot of time talking about the different internal thoughts, anxieties. There is that push-pull that Pat's describing that I think probably you feel like you might not want to be public-facing, but because of what you do, what you love, what you do, at least in some capacity, you have to have that, right? And so it's that negotiation. Does that stress you out more than you would like to let on?
Yeah, I think it's super stressful, especially the internet is very loud right now. It's been very loud the whole pandemic. Yes. There's no way to really escape it because, you know, even when, like Danielle said, she deleted Twitter and other apps and stuff, but Instagram, I feel like, is one of the most toxic ones. And as a photographer, most people will look at your Instagram even before your website, which
I haven't. Yeah. I haven't updated my website in like 2 years and I need to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me glad that I'm not like in a band that this, you know, and like have to really hustle on social media or something.
I feel bad for bands now, though. They're expected to be internet personalities and like want to do Instagram lives, and like not everybody wants to do that. It goes for photographers as well, but I think we've been kind of used to it for a while because like Instagram, you know, there's a lot of people who've built their careers on there, and whether or not that's sustainable, I don't know, but we'll see, I guess.
Well, so with that, I was going to say, you know, we hear it from bands. I know I talked to some bands and they're like, what do we do? How do we be a band when we can't play shows? And maybe we released a record already, or we're planning to, and we don't even know if it's a good idea to do that right now, whatever. So they're trying to do all this creative stuff. We know that To the Front did a few things. I'd like to hear about that. But then for each of you individually, like, what is there to even do? You know, obviously, I think you've even referenced it, kind of diving into your bag of non-music photography or non-live photography. But like, how do you keep yourself out there and available to do something that you really enjoy?
Well, I was going to say, yeah, no, Erica, you go. I'm talking way too much.
Sorry, as far as what To the Front has been doing, it's like right before March, when things started shutting down, we were planning on going to Pittsburgh for Anti-Fest because they invited us to have a pop-up at the festival. And obviously we had to cancel that like a week before. I think it was like a week or two before it was going to happen. So we just took some time not doing anything because, you know, mental health and, you know, people were losing work. Tours were getting canceled. And when we finally started planning things again, we had been talking about doing a zine. And finally, it was like June or July when we started organizing it with Amanda Foetz, who's another music photographer in Canada. And basically we did it. We were able to raise $9,500 for Black Lives Matter movement was, you know, like something that's really important to a lot of us. And that's something we wanted to focus the zine on. So we just angled the zine in that direction to like uplift Black voices and then give back to our local communities. So we were able to do something positive with that. And I think it kind of gave us all a lot of like a little sliver of hope that it's nice to have something to look forward to. And it, you know, with our shows, we try to give back. And I think it was a positive thing that we did the zine. Yeah. And then same with For the Children recently, Katnish Medin, who's been designing our posters for us since our first show, designed a tote to give back to a toy drive for a local Los Angeles drive. So
it's awesome.
Doing things like that has, I think, personally been really nice for me. Like, it's been really depressing this whole time. Like, just being home and doing something positive is always a nice serotonin.
Fulfilling.
Droplet.
Yeah. Sure.
It's fulfilling. With what we're doing to, like, I guess, keep busy. Kat, Erica, Courtney, and I have been trying to plan safe, social distance kind of shoots with each other, just something to do. Like, Erica, Kat, and I went to Huntington Gardens and just three of us walking around taking pictures. Like, you know, we got COVID tested and quarantined and we did that. And that was like a nice, it's just like, okay, figuring things out, things to do to like keep ourselves busy. And so that was one of them. And, you know, we've been trying to get to Pioneer Town together also, but just, I mean, none of us feel really good, like safe about it, you know, right now with how the numbers are. So we've just been trying to come up with little things. And we did a t-shirt. And you know, Kat and I shot each other in the t-shirt and we're like, oh, buy our shirt, whatever. Like, Kat made this amazing backdrop of like flowers from Michael's and we did the whole thing in my kitchen. So it's just kind of coming up with, okay, well, how can we keep ourselves busy? And also we miss each other.
Yeah. Another thing I forgot to mention was, we've been doing live streams, which is new to all of us. And Carly's been very helpful with helping us figure out how to stream on Twitch. But it's been nice to just like, we want to keep it going and do more and more photographers and more artists, but just having a conversation with other artists, watching like illustrators and designers talk to each other from different states about their work. It's nice to kind of just like take your mind off of things and focus on their artwork and what they're passionate about. So that's been another positive. It's called To the Front Talk, and we're trying to like keep it going. We're not on any schedule at all.
We're like on Twitch.
Yeah.
So just check the dreaded social media, and people will find out about it that way.
That's another reason why it's like, oh, we can't not be on the internet entirely because we're trying to do things on it here and there.
Yeah. So it's such like a big topic my experience with Instagram is altogether positive because there's like weird trolls and fake accounts that'll just like drop in every once in a while because people are strange. But in general, I don't have the kind of like, I don't observe the type of like insane toxicity that a lot of women experience on there, but also like maybe people who have to constantly put work out to remind the world that they're doing something, you know, it kind of like, it's a sad phenomenon that the more you put out, the more you make yourself available for a weirdo. You know what I mean? And it's I hadn't really considered that with trying to promote a photography career, but I would imagine that you have people whose opinions nobody asked for and they just appear, you know what I mean? Unless you want to talk about all that, we can keep it positive and talk about some of your individual projects and anything that you might want to tell the world about. Is there anything that you've talked a little bit about what you've been keeping busy with? Is there anything that, because a lot of times if we have musicians on, people will know not just where to find them, but know what to look for. Okay, they got an album coming out, et cetera, et cetera. Like, oh, I should check out that thing that they're talking about. But is there any projects of your own that you'd like to make people aware of?
I have a dog coffee table book Kickstarter that I'm...
Okay, this I love. Awesome. Go on.
Yeah, this is the reason we're doing this, actually, everybody. This book looks awesome. So please talk about this.
Yes.
Thank you. It's been a struggle because I don't have a large following on the internet, and I kind of expected it to be a climb to get to a goal. That's to make a hardcover book is expensive, and the more you make, the less it's cheaper to make. Like the more you know. So I basically was like, I'm going to try to make this amount of books, and I'm going to put this idea of it on Kickstarter, which has to be crowdfunded. Only make it if you hit your goal. If you don't hit your goal, no one is charged. So like right now I'm more than halfway there, but I have like 8 days left or something like that. And basically the concept is a coffee table photo book of dogs that have found homes during quarantine. Some of them will be just portraits of the dogs, like up close and where they're from, their name. Others like with their family. It's all like in a backyard or a park because I've been trying to scatter any shoots that I can to be safe because I don't go anywhere other than to meet up with these people and take pictures of their dogs. So I have like a few friends locally. Like a lot of people ended up having pets that they adopted. So it's just like the project idea itself makes me happy. And I was like, it's worth a shot to try to get this funded. And if it is funded, then I'll make the book. And if it's not, then maybe I'll make a zine eventually and it'll be more affordable. But, you know.
I think we'll probably pump this one on our socials over the next few days.
Yes.
That's a very worthy project. That's right in my wheelhouse. I like that a lot.
Is there a website like that we can direct folks to?
Yes, it is Kickstarter. Actually, I made a link tree. No, I didn't. It's a tinyurl.com.
Yeah.
/ Erica's dog book.
So
easy to remember.
For anybody listening, this is recorded the week before this comes out. So you will have basically 24 hours to get on that link and help fund this by the time that you hear this on Tuesday.
Who's joining us with you, Erica?
My dog that's with me is on the cover of the book, and I got him in April. But I, this whole time I've been worried that you can hear him snoring because he's been snoring in his bed.
Not at all.
No, you've been good.
He's so handsome.
Anyways, enough about me.
Yeah.
No, it's perfect.
We'll put that up. We can put that up before the episode comes up just so to give you a little bit more time. Thank on
you. That. I appreciate
100%. That. That's such a cool idea. Such a cool idea. And do you think
these dudes don't know that I've already posted about it from the Axicron socials? That,
oh, fucking fantastic. Love it. All right.
But we will do it more. So
yeah, please. Yeah, absolutely. And is there any thoughts about doing, like, this is something that was relatively new to me. A buddy of mine, is like a pretty like well-known photographer in New York. This dude, Justin Barucci, he's like a pretty known guy or whatever. He did like his own like self-published book. Has there ever been any thoughts about doing like a book of your own, like that? It's sort of like all it's as it's ordered, so there's no sort of risk of kind of like I need to sell X amount before I, you know, before I break even or anything. It's kind of like someone orders it and then this company puts it together and sends it to the client.
I guess the problem, even just while I was planning, like budgeting your Kickstarter, you can't lower your goal once you have set it.
Sure,
but is finding a company that like will print just one book for not like $300, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't realize how difficult it was. And I found like another company after I had already launched my Kickstarter that was like slightly cheaper, but it was kind of known for like messing the book up somehow.
Oh gosh. Like, that's all you need. Yeah.
It's funny because when I was in college, one of my final photojournalism projects, well, I had two. One was we had to completely DIY a book by hand. So we had to get it printed and then we had to bind it and sew it with like dental floss. And I still have it. And it's all live photos I took. I called it How You Remember. And I don't even remember like what band that song is from. It's from like a like some band, but like that was crazy. That was such a cool process. And I was like,
you want to make my dog book, Danielle?
I actually, you know what, we'll talk about this because I kind of want to, because also another, I had like an independent study in college as well, and this was the 1 year anniversary of Hurricane Sandy in New Jersey. So I went down across just like a bunch of different shore towns, like just throughout the year. And I shot it all on film. And then I have to find this company, but I was able to literally just print one book for like $50. And it was, but this was in 2014.
Yeah.
So
it was a different time, Danielle.
It was a different
going
time.
All the way back to the beginning.
Danielle, you sent that to me. I still have it, the PDF of it. All those photos, because it's where I live, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's pretty wild. I actually think that I mean, that's something that ages in a weird way. Like people will want to see those photos. Like my son, who is, you know, was born a year after that, they learn about it because he goes to school in one of the towns that was really affected. He goes to school in Bayhead. So it's right up from Manilocan. And so they learn about it in school and they talk about it. It's like, oh yeah, here's the damage that was done to the school, all this stuff. So I actually pulled it out like on my laptop and was showing him all the pictures. He's like, oh wow. So, I mean, we're kind of wrapping up here. Please check out Erica's book. Before we go, I wanted to ask if you have any advice or words for people who are interested in photography, interested in doing their own art, interested in doing events. What would you tell someone who is curious about that? We actually get those questions all the time from people young and old who are looking to do stuff, and y'all do a lot of stuff. So what would you say to somebody looking to do things?
If I could give anyone advice, it would be to just pick up a camera, take pictures for yourself, find your style. Just, you know, one of my favorite teachers had said that without light, photography is nothing. So like making light present in your photos is one of my favorite parts of it. and not to get discouraged from people that are trying to gatekeep photography or art. We've been doing something on To the Front that just started this month called To the Front Photo Challenge. And it's just anyone can do it. Just like giving photographers a theme to participate in. You go make the photo. We'll highlight everybody on our socials and give everyone the option to be on a, you know, show your work on our stream at the end of the month. Just so, you know, it's for everybody. Like, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do it if you're passionate about it.
Yeah. Go. Make art. Do it. Just go for it. There are no fucking rules. And, like, don't be afraid to ask questions. Like, some people are not going to share information with you, and generally those people suck. But just fucking do it.
Also, like, I mean, don't get too discouraged. It's really easy to hate the work you do, but someone out there is going to see something of yours and feel inspired by it. So take a chance and just do it. It's fun, you know, just don't think too much and just make it happen.
Sound advice. Thank you very much for joining us today. This was as smooth as a 6-person Zoom could ever go. So appreciate you very much.
This is incredible. Thanks. This is great.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Yes. Thanks everybody. Thank Hopefully we'll do this again soon. We'll be promoting the next in person To the Front. Hopefully we'll have it in New York. Maybe we'll do a co-hosting thing and like,
no, November 2021, life might look normal. Hoping for the best.
I mean, isn't it normal to you right now?
I mean, I'm partying. I'm just in my house doing the same thing I'm always doing. But anyway, thank you again.
Yes, that was great. Thank you.
Danielle, Erica, Carly, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.